everyone, welcome back to Screamfish. I'm Julie Levac, and today I am joined by Paul Levac and Jolie Featherstone. It's kind of like the Dream Team 2.0. I'm kind of excited. Yes. So thank you guys for chatting with me today. Today we are talking about Onward. It's Pixar's new film about a fantastical world in modern times, almost. It's starring Tom Holland, Chris Pratt, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Octavia Spencer, among others. A great cast. And so I figured we're just going to hop right into it and let's chat about our thoughts on the film overall.
Awesome. Well, if I may start, I personally loved Onward. I truly enjoyed it. I described it to folks after I saw it in that I laughed harder than I thought I would, and I'm not embarrassed, maybe slightly embarrassed, to say that I cried also harder than I thought that I would. Mm-hmm. I was really touched by the message. You know, I think there are a lot of kind of classic and traditional kind of storylines here. However, it did surprise me in the end. But overall, I thought it offered a wonderful message, beautiful animation, and just an overall fun experience, both for adults and kids.
Yeah, I thought it was really fun too. I really like the concept of the, you know, fantastical creatures in the modern day suburbia. I thought it was really funny that the sort of once majestic unicorn is now sort of like a raccoon on the street. Eating trash and getting shooed away. I thought that was hilarious. It was super touching at the end of the film. I definitely almost shed a tear. I left feeling really warm and fuzzy. You know, I don't think it was the best that Pixar has ever done. I don't think it's going to go down as one of like the great animated movies of our time or anything, but it was good. I liked it. It was super fun. And I feel like it seemed to have a bit of a mediocre success at the box office. I think it's a unique release month for a Pixar movie. I think they're more towards the summer or more Christmas. Do they usually release around Christmas sometimes?
They can. They are typically bigger revenue movies. So yeah, those times typically. Although I don't have the definitive release schedule of all right. Pixar movies, but
right.
If I had to guess, it's probably around that line.
Yeah, so what'd you think?
You know, you save the best for last, I guess, but I'm not. I'm very lukewarm on the film.
Interesting. I thought you would love it.
No, but there's the problem because I it's right on my wheelhouse when you're talking subject matter, the world. But I thought it went the way of The Good Dinosaur.
Okay.
But
I've been hearing that comparison as well, too. Just reading online, I've seen a few people make that comparison.
Yeah. I felt like even in the animation styles, I felt was a big piece because like the world is so expertly crafted and very detail oriented. But then you have these cartoony characters, which is not a bad thing. But like it just seems very jarring when you look when you put the two next to each other.
Okay, right? I see what you're saying.
I don't know. I was very I went in with too high expectations personally.
Mm-hmm.
I was really excited for the subject matter, and I felt like it really let me down.
That's too bad. Oh, man. Yeah, I think in terms of the subject matter, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't out of the ordinary for Pixar to do something about a lost parent and all that kind of stuff.
It fell into every single trope you could find. Every single one, almost.
It was still good, though, but perhaps
sure.
Other than the world that was created... It wasn't as unique as it could have been.
Sure. I mean, you have buddy comedy, so they have their conflict, obviously, that's going to happen with the two brothers.
Right.
You have your road trip elements, so they're going to run into a biker gang, which they did. you have the mother concerned about the kids running away, so she's chasing them, always one step behind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it just felt like every single stereotype that there is. You didn't do anything unique. You just took all the stereotypes, mashed them into one, and put them in a unique world.
Hmm.
It's like cooking the same dinner in a new pot.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I like that metaphor.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I definitely, I guess I liked it more than you, which is strange because I definitely expected you to like it more. But that's cool.
I just felt like it didn't have an identity.
Hmm.
It didn't have anything that made it unique. It took all these elements from everything else, but it was just, if you boil it down to its base elements, it felt like the same story told in a different way.
I kind of, and you know, bear in mind, I haven't seen every Disney Pixar film out there, but I thought that which I think was one of the main sort of themes of the film, where he was looking for something. I think that he was having sort of a bit of a crisis in his teen years. He didn't know who he was. He didn't know who he wanted to be or what the next step was in his life. You know, like we all go through that. He had lost his father. He didn't even know who his father was. And there was definitely a void that needed to be filled with him. But what was interesting to me is he was looking to fill that void in either changing himself or looking to fill the void with spending however many hours with his father. And he was able to find what he was looking for in something completely unexpected, which was his brother. And I just thought that that was such an interesting twist at the end. Maybe it wasn't a twist. I can't really call it a twist, but I thought it was an interesting way that they moved the story.
I like also just the, again, like the contrast between the two brothers. You obviously have like the straight man and the sort of like alternative, like goofy kind of one. I mean, Chris Pratt and Tom Holland, I think, did great jobs developing the voices of these characters. I felt that they both came to life for me. And I like the concept of, you know, the older brother being so into history and, you know, mythology and magic. And yet it's the younger brother who, you know, I wouldn't say outright rejects those things, but he certainly doesn't seem as preoccupied with them as his brother. Mm-hmm. And yet he's the one that has this innate magical ability. So I kind of liked that, just playing with that and the notion of, you know, destiny versus choice and interest kind of thing.
I love that you brought that up, because one of the most fascinating things I thought was the fact that neither brother could have completed this quest without one another. It was like the ultimate, I'm going to say dream team, sorry. It was like the ultimate dream team, and they both brought their own special ability to the quest, you know. Barley was just a historian. He knew everything that there was to know about the history, the quests, the magic spells. And then Ian just had the power. And so although it sort of drove them apart for a moment, it really brought them back together. And I think that they realized that they needed each other. And it was special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
I think to a certain extent, it kind of brought them back to the realization that they've always had each other. Mm-hmm. More so than that they've always needed each other.
Well, because there was... Ian had these lists, and he initially started off with a list of things that he wanted to, I don't know if it was things he wanted to accomplish or things that he wanted to change about himself or something like that. And then also he began to create this list of things that he wanted to do with his father for that one day. And it was so interesting to see him go through the list and start realizing that, wait a second, all of these things are happening, just not the way that I thought, maybe not with the person that I thought. So, and they were all happening because of Barley, or in connection with Barley. So it was, I thought it was really kind of interesting how it all tied together in the end.
I don't know. In my opinion, the Manticore stole the show though.
Oh, she was epic.
Octavia Spencer was, in my opinion, I wouldn't say call it the best character, but she was by far got the most laughs out of me, at least.
Oh, she added something special for sure. I didn't recognize that it was Octavia Spencer when I was watching the film. When I found out, I was like, that's even better. She's so good.
I didn't even realize it was Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
I didn't either.
I didn't pick up on that either.
Other than Chris Pratt, I didn't really recognize a lot of the voices. But Chris Pratt, even though you know immediately that it's Chris Pratt, it was perfect for Barley.
I definitely felt that, you know, there's certain I certainly think in like the last 10 to 15 years there's definitely been a shift in Disney movies and animated films overall, regardless of the studio or the production company, but there's certainly more, I think, casting actors who are, you know, like A-list Hollywood actors, as opposed to, you know, trained voice actors. When I look at some of the classic Disney films from, you know, the early 90s and prior to that, a lot of the times it was voice actors as opposed to, say, A-list stars. So whenever I see animated films come out that's predominantly populated by A-list stars, I'm always like a little bit weary. But certainly there are times when those actors just embody the part and they depart from the voice that we typically associate with them. Obviously, in this case, I felt Chris Pratt and Tom Holland just did such an excellent job of bringing the characters to life. When I was watching it, I was thinking of the characters exclusively. I wasn't thinking, oh yeah, that sounds like Chris Pratt. Oh yeah, that sounds like Tom Holland. Another example of this recently, I can't remember if you both saw this film, but Smallfoot, the lead character is voiced by Channing Tatum. And you wouldn't, if you didn't know that, you wouldn't necessarily pick up on, oh yeah, that sounds just like Channing Tatum. Yeah, I think he actually also did a great job in that film. But long story short, I think that Pixar, every now and again, has a film where they do cast A-list Hollywood actors, and yet they really truly bring the character to life outside of the voice that we already associate with them.
So I can confidently say that we haven't seen Smallfoot. What is it? What was it again?
Smallfoot, yeah.
Smallfoot. But just looking at the cast is weird.
Like, it's an incredible cast, and they do an excellent job.
Zendaya. Wow. James Corden, Gina Rodriguez, Danny DeVito.
James Corden.
LeBron James? Yep. It's random.
Yeah, I can definitely see what you're saying, where if they cast a whole bunch of A-list actors, you're like, maybe that's what they're trying to sell the movie as opposed to a good story or, you know, good animation or something.
Yeah, and you're watching the characters always with that context in the back of your head. Think, especially if the voice that they're using to bring this character to life isn't too much of a departure from, you know, the typical voice that we are exposed to in their other films. But certainly, I think there are some great examples these days. And I thought Onward was an example of this as well, where, you know, I wasn't... You know, sometimes you're listening to the voice and you're like, okay, yeah, I'm listening to Chris Pratt or I'm listening to Tom Holland. But I didn't feel that with Onward. I truly, truly felt so connected to these brothers, and they came to life for me very well. So kudos to the actors and, of course, all the sound team that worked on this as well.
Oh, for sure. It just reminds me of... Toy Story, you know, Buzz and Woody.
Tom Hanks. Yeah, I was actually thinking of them too.
Yeah, Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. I mean, they're definitely Tom Hanks and Tim Allen's voices, but they are Buzz and Woody, and it just, they embody it, absolutely. So I found it interesting the role that technology played in this film, because I'm just going to say the quote, which is from the beginning of the movie, which was, "Long ago, the world was full of wonder. It was adventurous, exciting, and best of all, there was magic. And that magic helped all in need. But it wasn't easy to master. And so the world found a simpler way to get by. Over time, magic faded away." So slowly the magic was replaced by technology, and technology just kept advancing, and obviously life became easier. But do we think that it sort of stripped, and it's hard to separate the technology in the movie from the technology in real life, and this is sort of a question in everybody's life these days, you know, what is the presence of technology stripping away? Do you know what I mean? The magic was gone, and it's like it had totally changed the world. Did I say the magic was gone or the technology? Yeah. I think I messed that up. Technology, talk.
Yeah, I mean, I can see where they're going in that regard. I think they're leaving it more open to the audience to determine what technology is taking away rather than telling us, because clearly we don't have magic. I can't shoot lightning bolts out of a rod, although that would be pretty cool. but they leave it more to the audience to come across, which is, you know, taking this a different meta layer. Without technology, this movie wouldn't exist.
Ooh.
Right? So.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because... It's not said either way if it's a good thing or a bad thing that the magic faded and the technology took over. It's not like they're saying, you know, life is so terrible because the magic is gone. It was just sort of something that happened over time, as it has in our own world. But I thought it was interesting. What did you kind of think of that, Julie?
I mean, Paul, I love the points that you raised, because I do agree that they left it fairly open to the audience. They showed that rather than told it, and left it, I think, to each viewer to kind of to interpret it in their own way. I think for me, again, that was definitely something I was paying attention to throughout the film, and I was kind of wondering, I'm like, ooh, are we going to get sort of like a Wall-E-esque message going on? But I think ultimately what stood out to me was, again, less about the functionality per se of the technology or the specifics behind this kind of change in lifestyle, but more about the repercussions of how we interact with others and how we feel about ourselves. I feel like there's a lot of commentary about, you know, self-esteem and self-efficacy, and throughout the course of the film, people sort of rediscover themselves or rediscover their sense of confidence and their sense of ability and adventure. The Manticore being one character in particular, certainly the brothers, but almost all the characters, the sort of stepfather / police officer, all the characters kind of have this sort of reawakening or rediscovery of certain parts of themselves that maybe they had kind of left dormant for a while because they were relying on technology or what have you. So I felt it was more of like the psychological aspect of kind of getting back in touch with yourself and your sense of ability and sense of self and self-esteem.
I love that. Yeah. The Manticore specifically, how she, mm-hmm. you know, rediscovered her purpose. And she, yeah, at one point she's like, what am I doing? Like, this is not who I am. So that's fascinating. I didn't even think about it. And then in terms of Ian, he didn't rediscover who he was. He found out who he was. He found something that was deep inside of him that he didn't even know was there. So that's incredible.
Yeah, you got an interesting glimpse into how his mind worked, so to speak. If you look at, you know, the lists and, you know, his internal monologue that we caught glimpses of in the movie.
Yes.
I think that felt like a very conscious decision by the writing staff and the production team.
The lists were so fascinating and very telling of his personality, and and that's kind of what ended up tying the storyline together at the end was the lists. So that was amazing. So like I mentioned before, the loss of a parent is not a new storyline for Disney Pixar. But I thought it was interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, because like I said, I haven't seen them all, but there was sort of not a replacement figure, but there was a stepfather figure in Colt Bronco, played by Mel Rodriguez. So I thought that was... I don't know. It was interesting because it was sort of a stepfather figure, but he didn't really live there. What do you think that Colt Bronco brought to the storyline? And do you think that there was sort of an effect, there was any sort of effect on the boys? I know that at one point he tried to help, but he sort of hindered the quest.
So I got a bone to pick with Colt Bronco first and foremost.
Why?
Not necessarily him, but more so the production staff.
Okay.
You're living in a world with magic, okay. Living in a world with centaurs, you're living in a world with technology. You're telling me he had to squeeze his giant horse butt into a small person car? They couldn't make one that fit a horse?
Fair.
It doesn't... come on, guys. Like, work with me here.
It added a bit of comedic relief, though, him squeezing into the car.
Right. But the third time I saw it, I'm like, okay, you got to... There's something you got to manufacture here.
That's fine.
Just kind of annoyed me.
That's fair. Do you think that he you know, helped or hindered the quest?
Or neither. My perspective, it's a great question. Obviously, he certainly is coming from a good place, and I think he certainly believes that he is helping and wants to help. Certainly, from the perspective of, you know, trying to be a good partner. and knowing that his partner is obviously very worried about her sons, and he's trying to be a good partner and trying to be a good, you know, potentially a father figure to these two boys. He's also a police officer, so, you know, he, I'm sure, feels like a strong sense of duty and responsibility, considering these boys have probably broken many laws.
Yes.
On this quest. But I think it was interesting because it felt like every character in this film took a journey, no matter how large or how small. Colt, certainly, we feel that he takes a journey, not only from, as we were talking about, you know, his dependence on technology, and then coming into his own and rediscovering his, you know, self-confidence and his return to running, but also just as, again, as someone who is potentially going to become a father figure to these two boys. And certainly the scene when the brothers are disguised as him, that gets kind of brought up, you know, coming from the perspective of someone who's, you know, I think the other police officer mentions becoming sort of a stepmom to her girlfriend's daughter or son. But yeah, I thought it was just interesting that he kind of had his own journey as well, and it gets sort of touched upon. So it's really, I think, a nice kind of nod to having empathy for all these different characters who are trying to operate with good intentions. Yeah, so that's kind of what I felt from Colt.
Yeah, I know he was sort of a side character, but I just thought his, you know, the way that he was involved with the family and then involved with the quest in the middle there, mm-hmm. I was wondering, you know, other people's opinions on how he might have affected the storyline, so.
I'm surprised the mother wasn't more pissed off at him for calling in the cavalry to chase his own sundown, or to chase her own sundown.
For. And speaking of the mother, I was quite impressed by her, because obviously she was concerned for her sons and wanted to help them, but there was one point where she, like, summons the manticore and becomes this you know, heroine. It was incredible.
Yeah, goes, I loved that as well.
She goes back to her workout DVDs and I Am the Warrior.
Yeah.
And there you go. That's where, like, the magic and the modern sort of, like, well, I won't call it modern. I think it was kind of early 90s, let's be real. But where it sort of merges and putting the two together and getting the job done. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you guys about was, what do you guys think about the sort of selfless act of Ian letting Barley say sort of an official goodbye to his father? He took a step back and he was going to finish fighting the dragon, and he let Barley, instead of saying, no, I want to meet Dad for the one and only time, he lets Barley go and say a proper goodbye.
I mean, it's obviously a very selfless act. I mean, he came to the realization that he's not going to get a relationship with his father in a minute and a half.
Right.
He's not going to be able to create a lasting memory, so might as well give the only father figure in his life that he's had closure.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I personally loved that moment. I thought it was so beautiful, and again, as you mentioned, very selfless. I think it was a great sort of recognition of grief and having empathy for those who are experiencing that. And just a great sort of acknowledgement of, I guess, the culmination of their journey of discovering each other and their love and care for each other. Throughout the whole film, Barley obviously comes across as, you know, having no care in the world, not being afraid of anything, being very boisterous and extroverted. So until we have that really tender moment with him in the tunnel, where he mentions having that lasting memory, which I would imagine, you know, would cause a lot of pain to anyone, regardless of what age they are, but certainly to have that memory stick with you as a child, feeling of sort of letting down his dad and letting himself down, and, you know, not having the courage to say goodbye when he was afraid. There certainly felt that there was a lot of loose ties there where he needed to perhaps forgive himself for that. And so for Ian to let his brother have that moment, to see his dad and hopefully have that moment of closure and allow himself to say goodbye properly, and also to forgive himself ultimately. Mm. I just thought it was beautiful and just spoke a lot about empathy and grief.
And any sort of, in my opinion, any way that you felt about the film up until that point, I think it just really, it really did the film justice, that whole last sort of couple of scenes. And I really thought it was mm-hmm. special that Ian was able to watch from afar. He was able to experience that moment, even though he wasn't with his father, you know, right up close, he was able to see his father, and he was able to witness that relation, that father-son relationship, and it was there, and it was sort of passed on from Barley to Ian when he gave him the hug, I think, and it was just such an incredible scene.
See, I don't think it was necessarily passed on at all. Like, I see where you're coming from, but I think it's more of Ian realized he's always had a father figure. It just happened to be his brother.
Right.
Right? So it's more of, you know, I see you as my father figure in my life, so I'm going to help fix you rather than try and steal something away from you.
Yeah. Right? It was that realization. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, it was definitely a huge act of love. You know, I think that I thought it was so beautiful and very touching that Ian kind of just from a distance and through all this rubble gets to see, you know, his father and his brother have that moment. And certainly, although you feel for Ian, because ultimately I think we wish every child would get to have, you know, a loving moment at the very least with their parent, there is a satisfaction there. I think that Ian also feels satisfied in seeing his brother have that moment. So ultimately I found it just very, very heart-wrenching, but it was just such a beautiful act of love.
Oh, it was incredible. And I think not only from the point of Ian, but now I'm thinking about Barley, and I think maybe Barley now realizes the responsibility that he has and mm-hmm. how, and not only the responsibility he has, but now sort of what he means to Ian, and mm-hmm. then I guess who he needs to be for Ian and for the family. So I think from all perspectives, and then I could imagine what the mother feels, you know, even the mother was saying, mm-hmm. no, let me take care of this. Go see your father, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So from every perspective, they're all just trying to, I don't know, they're all just trying to gain closure, I would assume.
I think it to take mm-hmm. if you want to take it to another level, talking about the psychologicalness and that, the whole concern with the older boy was a screw up, was never accomplished anything in his life. Could be that he's, you know, trying to hold on to his youth when his dad was around. He doesn't mm-hmm. want to give that up and move on to, you know, adult things, for lack of a better term.
Right.
And this closure may, you know, help spur that on.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he sort of would realize that he is, for lack of a better term, the man of the house. And mm-hmm. and I think that now he has more of a purpose as that.
Yeah. Although I have to say, and this was just my own personal thing, I kind of felt so bad that everyone kept calling Barley a loser and this and that. And
yeah.
You know, he's like, he's protecting historical monuments. He's like protesting. I'm like, I would say those are very grown up things to be doing and very worthwhile things to be doing. And yet everyone's kind of like, oh yeah, his older brother's kind of a loser. And then, oh gosh, that moment where the two police officers say that and Ian, through that spell, reveals that he sort of feels the same way about his brother.
Oh, right.
Oh, that just crushed me. Both my sister and I looked at each other. We're like, oh, geez, like, what a tense moment. But on a personal note, I just felt really bad for Barley. I didn't think he was deserving of all the loser labels that were thrust upon him.
For sure.
But absolutely, I love that point that you raise about perhaps Barley, you know, after having this moment of closure and love with his father, and also I think a moment to forgive himself as well, because I certainly think there was a lot of shame that he was carrying. I think you're absolutely right, and I didn't consider that, is that perhaps he also feels, you know, a shift in his own sense of identity as you know, the older brother and perhaps father figure to Ian.
Yeah, and I thank you for bringing it up about Barley and the fact that he was trying to conserve historical monuments and things like that, because if he hadn't previously fought to keep that monument, it wouldn't still be there for him to put the, whatever you want to call
Phoenix
it.
Gem.
That's where the...
Sorry, the nerd in me is coming out.
Right. That's where the Phoenix Gem was. And it wouldn't... They would not have been able to complete the quest had that have been previously destroyed. So Barley had a purpose, and he, you know, he killed it.
Yeah, absolutely. I personally, I loved Barley. I was so mad whenever anyone was saying mean things about him. But absolutely, I think it does speak to, you know, the importance of, I think, well, obviously there's so many messages in the film, but they're, you know, speaking to the importance of, you know, acknowledging and remembering and educating yourself on your history and, you know, protecting things that are important to you and potentially important to the greater society in the case of protecting historical monuments. But yeah, also just finding value in the things that bring you joy. Certainly, Barley loved that game he was playing. I forget what it was called, but loves that game. And people kind of joke about him loving that game. I think that's a large part of why people sort of make these comments that he's sort of infantilized and whatnot. And yet this thing that brings him so much joy actually ends up, you know, being hugely helpful throughout this quest. So yeah, I think overall it was such an uplifting film, and just looking at how, you know, the things that bring us joy can also be some of our greatest assets as well.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And the more I talk about it, the more I really appreciated the story, especially at the end. There was just one more thing that I have to mention, and it was sort of the constant reminder of, I guess the term would be using your heart's fire. Barley was constantly reminding Ian that in order for his magic to work, he needed to speak from his heart's fire or use his heart's fire. And I thought that was a very interesting sort of ongoing theme in the movie, and also a good reminder in life, you know, to cut the mediocrity and just be passionate and do things that you're passionate about, and you have to speak from your heart and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you could really interpret that in different ways, but I thought it was special.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, just seeing, obviously, Ian come into his own, seeing Barley come into his own, and, you know, I loved all those scenes. And Barley, throughout this quest, really is such a guiding light to Ian, even though it may not be apparent at times, or certainly Ian, I think, doubts Barley's capability to lead the quest at times. Mm-hmm. He really is trying to be, and he, I would say, not even trying, he just is being, you know, kind of a guiding force and a guiding light for Ian.
Yeah, I think Julie kind of nailed it when she was talking about passion. And I think speaking with conviction is what I think the biggest emphasis they were looking for, is that you have to believe what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, you know, you saw that he had issues speaking to just regular people they went to high school with or on the movie. Because I don't think he either knew who he was or even believed that he could be someone that they could actually hang out with.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's one of the key points going through this that he kind of learned towards the end. Because he was able to get up and give that speech at the end when he was talking to class for that short, brief moment. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Ian at the start of the movie could have done that.
100%. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I think that this is a good time to do Screen It or Skip It. All right, onward, Screen It or Skip It.
Can I go last?
Sure. I would say screen it. Personally, I really enjoyed it. I think the animation's beautiful. I love the concept, the premise. The performances are extremely charming. And just an overall really uplifting, loving message, which I think, you know, we certainly could always do more of in these days.
I say screen it as well. I'm bordering on stream it because I thought it was good, but I think it could be streamed. But it's one of those ones where, yeah, the animation is nice. I wouldn't call it like incredible groundbreaking animation, but it's nice to see on a big screen. And it's really heartwarming. It's a sweet movie. It's super fun. It is really witty as well. So I think it's definitely worth a watch.
You stole my thunder with the stream it. I was gonna go with meh, stream it.
Well, I was like, screen it, or you could stream it too. And Paul's just like, stream it. Don't ever see it. No, I'm just
No,
kidding.
I'm not. Don't ever see it. I'm saying don't pay movie prices. It doesn't need a big screen. You'll get the same enjoyment in your bed, under the covers, cuddling up with your kid and watching this movie,
Oh, that's cute.
right? Or falling asleep, as I might have.
Oh, gee. This is why we can't watch movies at home. We just end up falling asleep.
It is tough watching movies at home,
I
that's for
know.
sure. There's so many things I find just get distracted or you're just way too comfy.
I know. Well, that's actually a true test of a great movie is if you do not fall asleep at home when you're watching it.
If
That's
you
true.
do not fall asleep.
I can fall asleep during a tornado, so I'm not a good judge of that, but
So stream it.
cool. Thank you guys so much for chatting with me about this movie. It was so sweet. I love talking to both of you. And I really do appreciate and respect your opinions. So thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. It has been a pleasure stealing the podcast from Steve for these last 2 weeks. So in all honesty, I'm not positive what's coming up next week. I'll look into that for you. But Steve should be back. And who knows? Maybe I'll be here too. I'm not sure. Thanks again. Talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.